leading us through a series on sensational psalms, and I've got another one for us this morning. This is a psalm that is most often quoted or sung or read during Sabbath ceremonies, Jewish Sabbath ceremonies. And it's Psalm 95. Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. Come, let us bow down to worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, as you did that day at Massah in the desert, where your fathers tested and tried me, though they had seen what I did. For 40 years I was angry with that generation. I said, they are a people whose hearts go astray, and they have not known my ways. So I declared an oath in my anger. They shall never enter my rest. Now it's a beautiful psalm of praise, and it reminds us and the Jewish people of, I don't think that's meant to be up there, liberation of the people. But it talks at the end about God's rest. And it's the very last couple of words of the psalm after all that beautiful praise and description of how God has been with the people despite their rebellion. And just the last two words are, my rest, God's rest. And it's caused me to wonder, what is God's rest? Why do we come together every week on a Sunday? Why in our Western culture has it been that one day a week traditionally has been put aside so that we can worship together? And I bet if I was to go around and take a poll today, you'd say one of two things. First of all, because it's what God did in the garden and we wish to imitate him. And secondly, it's one of the commandments. And in fact, that commandment in Exodus, in chapter 20, says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter nor your manservant or maidservant, I wish, nor your animals, nor the aliens within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. And that, in reading that, just posed two more questions for me. What does it mean when it says that Yahweh, the Lord, blessed the Sabbath? What does it mean when it says he made it holy? They're words that we say, and certainly I've not ever put them together. Now, the Sabbath for the Jewish people involved a whole lot of rules and regulations. They were so particular about wanting to keep that commandment that they had to define what work it was that they were not allowed to do. And as life got more complicated, So the rules and regulations got more complicated. You know, how much they, how far they were allowed to walk. They certainly weren't allowed to do any food preparation or work in their fields or anything like that. But even to writing, you know, it got down to the stage where you were allowed to write one letter but not two. Or if you erased the first one, then you could write a second one. Regulations like that, it got more and more complicated. So they had lots of rules and regulations. When I was growing up, I get the feeling that we had almost as many rules and regulations regarding Sundays. I remember Sundays was not a day of rest in the sense of you sleep in and so on. My recollection growing up was that at about 9:30 we'd all head off to the church because we had all-age Sunday school. Does anyone remember that? Huh? Everyone went to Sunday school. So the kids had Sunday school and the adults had their Bible study from 9:30 till 10:30. Then there was a break. Then we had church service from 11 till 12 or whenever. I don't think we had coffee and stuff afterwards as we do now. But then straight after that, it became a tradition that either you invited people back to your place for lunch or you went to some other people's place for lunch, but it was always ad hoc. And it didn't matter because the Sunday lamb roast, which was the traditional thing, all you needed to do was have extra vegetables in and it always served as many as turned up. And then you just got through lunch and then you went back to the church for Christian Endeavour for a period of time. That, as I recall, that ceased sometime during my teenage years because then that was replaced by we were doing worship band practice, or if we were producing a musical at the time, then we'd be doing practice for that. And then that led into some sort of youth tea or something like that before we had our evening service. And then after the evening service, we then had coffee. And maybe after that, if there was some boys that had their license and had a car, you'd go out rabbit spotting down in the paddocks in the back of North Norfolk. Sunday was a busy day. But I also recall that there were no shops open, except maybe a milk bar, no service stations open, no sports on Sundays. And you never had a birthday party on a Sunday. I had a friend at school called Judy Lebansky, obviously Jewish, and she always had her birthday party on a Sunday and I could never go. No weddings on Sundays. Sunday was a church day. Now it's different. It's different again, isn't it? I don't know. Everything's open. We've got so many things that conflict with our time on Sunday, the sports on Sunday. And I know people with teenagers and some of you with young children going to have to make all sorts of decisions about priorities, especially with the sport on Sundays. So that raises a whole lot of other questions. Jesus contravened some of the rules and regulations, even though he kept the Sabbath. He hauled the Pharisees up with some of their definitions of work and what they were and were not allowed to do on a Sunday. Paul was most explicit that with the Gentile Christians, that he didn't want them to be bound by a lot of the Jewish traditions like circumcision and Sabbath practices and purity laws and so on. And yet, at the same time, Jesus, in Matthew chapter 12, he called himself the Lord of the Sabbath. And I really want to understand what that means. So to gain some meaning of what all this means for us, what it means for us to obey that one of the Ten Commandments, for instance, let's look at some of the history and with it some of the original meaning and intent of the Sabbath. Summary, God's intention in creating human beings in his image and putting them in the garden was for them to settle in and to settle there as part of his kingdom. His kingdom, if you like, is a place where heaven and earth meet, place where humans and God are present together, and where the ruling and reigning in abundance and fruitfulness would be forever. In other words, a Sabbath continuing. Now, in ancient and Near Eastern and Israelite culture, and in their ancient literature, seven, not just in Israelite culture, but all other Near Eastern cultures as well, the seven communicated a sense of fullness and completion. So there's a whole study to be done on seven, as was introduced there. So seven represents a whole completed creation and the journey that led up to that. Another one of the words that comes up, especially when we're going to look at that commandment about keeping the seventh day and keeping it for, because God has commanded us to, is the notion of rest. Now, we've got one word in English for rest, and that can mean to stop, you know, come to a stop, come to rest, stop work. It can mean to retire, recover, put your feet up when you're tired. And it can also mean a combination of those two things. Something that I'm not overly familiar with, but I've heard in cooking programs that if you're baking some meat, you should take it out for a bit before you serve it and let it rest. I've always wondered what that meant, because the meat wasn't doing any work and it wasn't tired. It must be that notion, that combined notion of settling in. Whatever, I don't know, I have to ask a cook. In Hebrew, there are at least two words for which we just translate the word rest. One of them means to just cease, and that's the word Shabbat, from which we get the Sabbath. So when initially in Genesis, where God Shabbated, he just stopped creation. And that's what it means when it said he rested then. And in fact, later on, when Joshua enters the promised land and the manna stops coming, then the manna Shabbats. So it just stops. And the other word that is used, which is used in Deuteronomy when, again, it's talking about the seventh day rest, is the word nuach. I hope that's a fair imitation of the correct pronunciation. And it actually means to settle in and to take up residence. And take up residence in a place that is safe and secure and stable. And so in Deuteronomy, where it says God rested on the Sabbath and blessed and made it holy, the rest that used there is the word he settled in. In other words, he put his presence or made his presence there. And the Sabbath then was a place where we were meant to settle with him in his presence. Now, the strange thing is, with all the arguments about work which should be done and could not be done and so on the Sabbath day, I don't know whether you've ever noticed that when God put humans in the garden, on the Sabbath day, the seventh day, he blessed them and told them to work in the garden. So obviously there is some work that is Sabbath work and other work that is not. And I think in that little clip from Bible Project, anyone look at or listen to Bible Project? Yep, okay, that's a Bible Project clip, okay? So you can find it on YouTube. That the intention was for the work to be joyful work. Work done in conjunction with God in ruling and reigning over his creation and working in his presence. A work that is joy. But outside the garden, of course, that work from which we desperately need rest and liberation became toil and a form of enslavement in a lot of cases. And the words blessing and holy, where God blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. Again, if you look in the first book of Genesis, where God blessed the humans that he'd made, he said he blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. So God's blessing was for fruitfulness and abundance. And the holiness was, and it is throughout the Bible, is being in God's presence. One theologian has expressed it like this. Set apart from all other days, the blessing of the seventh day establishes the seventh part of created time as the day when God grants his presence in the created world. It is then his presence that provides the blessing and the sanctification. The seventh day is blessed and established as the part of time that assures fruitfulness, future orientation, continuity, and permanence for every aspect of life within the dimension of time. Now, the Sabbath tradition is one of the longest running traditions of any culture in the world. But we're Gentiles. We don't celebrate Sabbath the way the Jews do. Although there are Seventh-day Adventists, or Christians, who choose to worship on the seventh day. Sunday is traditionally called the first day of the week, not the seventh. And there are Messianic Jews, that is Jesus followers, who maintain their Jewish culture and traditions, who celebrate Sabbath on the seventh day, and then will come together with other Christians on Sundays to worship. So I'm trying to work out what all this means for us. And I think there are three main things that we can pull from this. We know that this is one of the commandments. We know that we want to do what God has done. But all the instruction seems to be related to Jewish traditions and customs. So there's got to be some translation there. The first thing that we can do is remember what God's intention was for us. In keeping and observing or remembering the Sabbath in the Ten Commandments does stick out as a unique Jewish practice. But the Jews were told to do this for two reasons, and I think both of those reasons are relevant to us. They were told to do it because it was an act of participating in God's presence and in God's work. And that is something that we should be desiring to do. And the second reason, expressed in Deuteronomy, is because it was an act of implementing God's presence. That is, coming into God's presence and acknowledging God's presence in us through Jesus Christ and what God has done through Jesus to liberate us from the enslavement. We didn't need to be liberated from Egypt's enslavement, but all of us needs, every one of us needs to be liberated from the various other enslavements that have become part of our lives, whether it's work or an addiction or rebellion or pride or the many other sins that are part of our lives. So those two things are relevant to us. The second thing that I think that we can bring out of this that makes keeping the Sabbath important for us is that God not only created the world around us and gave us everything that we have, but he also created time. Now, we normally think that we are the master of time, and we treat time as though it is a commodity that we can dispose of as we please. We say things like, my time is my own, or I'm buying time, or give me some of your time, or let me save time, or I lost time doing something. And see how we, just in the phrases that we use, we treat time as a commodity. And in one sense, it is. It is something that God created and gave to us. Now, with everything else that God's created and given to us, we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge it by putting aside some of our material goods and giving them back to him for his work. So isn't it appropriate that the other thing that he has created for us, and that is time, that we take some of that time, maybe one day in seven, and give that back to him as an acknowledgement that this too is a gift that he's given us. There's a Jewish scholar that expresses it this way. The Israelite is duty-bound, however, once every 7 days to assert by word and deed that God is the master of time. One day out of seven, the Israelite is to renounce dominion over his own time and recognize God's dominion over it. Every seventh day, the Israelite renounces his autonomy and affirms God's dominion over him. See, for the Jewish people, the structure of the Sabbath, the way they celebrate it, is actually meant to be inconvenient. Friday is frenetic leading up to the Friday evening Passover meal, where all the shopping's got to be done, all the meals prepared for the whole of Friday night and all of Saturday. All the housework's got to be done. Any work that you were doing, if you work in a business, all the accounting's got to be done, and the shops have got to be shut by, sundown on Friday? Because nothing happens then again until Sunday morning. Inconvenient. In some ways, as inconvenient as it was when I was growing up and you couldn't buy petrol or buy any groceries on a Sunday. But it's a good reminder, isn't it? It's actually meant to be inconvenient. The same way as giving of our material goods is not a sacrifice unless it actually hurts a little bit and actually we're giving up something to give something to God. And in the same way, the Jewish people, I think, have had it right in that in giving back God this one day in seven, they've had to be inconvenienced to organise themselves to do that. I'm not sure how good we are at doing that, but I do remember a month or two ago when we had our church lunch and Greg did say, now, this is not an excuse for missing church because you're having people for lunch. Which did mean that those who were hosting lunch needed to get everything they needed to have ready on the Saturday and have it all ready to go and the table set and all the food prepared and so on, so that it didn't interfere with Sunday morning, and then after church we could all go home together and have lunch. I think there is something in that that we can take away. We can acknowledge God's ultimate ownership of everything, including our time. And the third thing we can take away is the knowledge that after the fall, humanity's reality is totally devoid of the nuach that God intended for them, that settling in. And the whole of the Old Testament is about God setting his people up and leading them to the promised land, to the next place, always in the hope of them being able to settle somewhere in his presence, being obedient to him and having him rule over them. And every time it got messed up because the people stuffed it up. Until finally God's solution to that was to come himself to us, to provide the freedom and to bring his kingdom, which is the beginning of the new creation, which is where the nuach will be, where we will be settling, working with fruitfulness and joy and settling in his presence. And that we can experience now because of what Jesus has done, because he's provided the liberation for us. So those three things I think that we can bring from all that. The fact that God is the master of our time. What God's intention for us was to be fruitful and to be blessed and to be in his presence. And we can remember, as we do every week, that Jesus has been the means by which that can happen for us now. Could the worship team please come up? Now, if we go through the New Testament, we can see that Jesus' entire ministry was actually to introduce God's kingdom, to usher in his kingdom. That was part of his prayer, that we pray, your kingdom come. And he showed us in the Beatitudes what it looks like and what it will be like in the new creation when his kingdom is all we experience, not just a bit of it, what the behaviour will be in his kingdom. And he showed through his actions, his miracles and his healing and his forgiving, he showed that the Sabbath was all about love and mercy, not legalism. and it was supposed to point to him, the one that was promised, the one that was promised to restore creation to what it was meant to be, a seventh day in perpetuity, perpetual Sabbath, no morning, no evening, constantly working in a way to bring joy and abundance and permanently in God's presence. We need to set aside time together to acknowledge that. We need to join together in his presence and to celebrate God's rest.